Hi, my name is Marcus, and this is a companion podcast for the CG Jung Help Desk Meetup Group. I host live events on Zoom every 2 weeks about the concepts and ideas of the Swiss psychologist Carl Gustav Jung. Every event, I give a presentation about the Jungian concept, so have fun with this event's topic.
All right, so welcome to today's topic, after some pause, which is on intuition. And as I just alluded to, the previous events have been recorded and they're forming right now a pretty good introductory course. So I'm talking about archetypes there and ions and dreams and analytical psychology and so on. So I did this for roughly 2 years, and then I want to continue now with going deeper into specific topics and setting them in the context of the ideas of Jung. And the first topic I wanted to talk about, it's a pretty central concept for Jung, and this is the one on intuition. And of course, I will be talking about what Jung talked about when he talks about intuition, because he has a very clear definition and very clear idea about what he means with that. And to understand intuition, we have to get into his ideas of psychological types and personality, how he characterizes the internal structure of personality in the psyche of a person. And he wrote a whole book about it. And the book is called Psychological Types. And I can highly recommend it because it's one of the very few Jung books that has some very clear definitions at the end. So that's pretty cool. The last pages are just definitions, what he means with certain words, because some words have like a colloquial meaning and they can be misunderstood, which what he means. For example, feeling. He has a very clear idea about feeling, but not so many people use feeling in this way. So I will give a short introduction just into his ideas of psychological types to make it a little bit more clearer what he tries to get at, for example, in intuition. So he sees four pathways of information, facts, data from the outside world, from the unconscious, into consciousness. And this is sensation, thinking, feeling, and topic for today, intuition. And he sees there a clear path how, let's say, information gets processed. Sensation says there is something. For example, I see something. This is a kind of, again, not so sharp definition, but I'm saying I'm feeling something inside my body. Let's say a certain pain comes up. This is just that, oh, there is something. Thinking is, okay, what is it? When I see something, right now I'm seeing my kitchen, or I'm feeling something in my stomach, then I say, oh, I have a pain in my stomach. Feeling then describes a value judgment. Like, do I like it or don't I like it? I like my kitchen because it's mine, and the stomach ache I don't like so much because it's annoying. And then comes intuition. And intuition is a little bit different than the other ones, because intuition is about possibilities. It's not really what is there, but what could be there. Where is something coming from? Where is something potentially going? So the things that are not really graspable immediately. So he has these four functions that he uses very often, and he groups them. And he says there are two types of groups. There's judgmental and perceptive. Perceptive is sensation and intuition. Judgmental is thinking and feeling. And the logic behind is that for judgmental functions, for thinking and feeling, you can have a causal relationship between certain steps. You can think of something and then think about something else and so on. For example, when you build an argumentation, you lay out the logic between certain facts. And that's thinking. But also for feeling, when you try to find out how you stand to something, whether you like something or don't like something, or if the complete thing has like three things you like, but five things you don't like. And this is then judgmental. And perceptive is really, okay, there's just things suddenly coming up in a kind of unstructured way. Same as when you see something outside or experience something inside, it can be seemingly completely random. For example, when you have a dream and you just notice that there is something as a dream. And he says each function can be used in a specific way, or let's say grade of quality. It can be very sophisticated. For example, when you're very clear thinker, let's say even when you're very clear differentiated feeler, then you can take something completely apart. It's not one thing where you have one value judgment about it, but you realize that it consists of many, many different parts, and you can have very fine-grained value judgments of feelings towards it and can also articulate them. You can experience them, but you can also articulate them. And if you're undifferentiated, and for example, I have undifferentiated feeling, you may have a very complex thing and just dislike it or like it. Let's say, for example, Jung. I dislike Jung as an example. And somebody would ask me, like, why? Why do you dislike Jung? And then I give some answer, because he's Swiss and I don't like Swiss people, right? This is not very sophisticated. But when you start talking, okay, the way how he approaches certain ideas that are outside his field, where he's just taking things that he thinks are fitting and adds them to its repertoire, I think it's kind of loosey. And that would be already kind of sophisticated. So the question is, how fine-grained argumentations can you make? How far perceptive can you have? And this is then differentiated. This is when you have really approaching it from a rational, say, feeling standpoint. And undifferentiated is like, okay, it's not really rational. It's more like a feeling. It's not formulated well. You cannot really argue about it because the words are not there. The understanding is not there. So, and then he says, each of us has a favorite function when we come into this world, just as handedness. We have a favorite left hand, a favorite, for example, or right hand. It's just the way things are. This is how we stand out. And he says, but some people are just born feeling types, born thinking types, born intuition types, or born sensation types. And this also means there is something in contrast to that, and that he calls the inferior functions. Always in the same group, the other side. Because within one group, they're not matching so well. It's hard to feel something about something and think about it, let's say, emotionless. This is how he's defining it. And then as a last point, you can do all these things extroverted or introverted. Jung coined these terms. They are coming from Jung. And he applies them not so much in a social setting. This is how they're used today. But rather, are you interested in things that are happening in the outside world or in the inside world? When you have time, when you have attention, when you have interest, where are they towards? Are they towards things happening outside in the physical world, or are they happening in the psychological world? Good. This is just to establish some terms and definitions. If you go now deeper on the topic of intuition, it's really about the things you cannot see or hear. They might come up as that, as a fantasy, for example, but it's not really clear that you just perceive something that's not really there. He calls it even perception through the unconscious. There's coming information to you that is not, let's say, available, but just looking at a thing. For example, I have a friend and he studied geology. When he goes into a walk in the forest, he can say, okay, there was 10,000 years ago, it was under layers of ice and rocks came here through and they formed the whole landscape. This is something that's missing for me, because for me, it's very undifferentiated to look at the forest, but for he has the background knowledge. It would be the same way to see something and have a different creative idea about what it else could be. But the potential would be, let's say, I don't know whether you remember, it's maybe for the people who are a little bit older, but there was this advertisement from Mentos, the fresh maker, and it was about a woman that had problem with her hair, and she took just her sock and made like a something to keep her hair together. I'm missing the English word, but this is the idea from saying, okay, I have something that could be used in another way. So quote that Jung gives for that is, through our senses, we experience the known, but our intuition points to things that are unknown at him, that by their very nature are secret. This is why he puts a contrast between sensation and intuition, because sensation tells us directly what there is. There's no doubt about it. But intuition is like seeing things that are not really there. And he says, as an interesting product of intuition, to have an intuition comes a form of symbol. We get a kind of finished product where you're not sure where it's coming from. And the example I'd like to use, there was a famous Indian mathematician called Srinivasa Ramanujan, which I pronounced horribly, but he had no formal training in mathematics, but he had ideas about mathematics. He had intuitions that came up and told the solutions to problems. So he contributed really a lot to mathematics, even though that he did not have really the background knowledge. as well, just for how the psyche was working. So what he had coming up was an intuition about a problem and a solution to the problem. And he had to backtrack what the way to there was. So he came first up with the solution and then with the argumentation how to reach it. Most cases, when you, for example, write a scientific paper, you do it the other way around. At least that's how you pretend, that you say, I have this problem and these hypotheses, and I test the hypotheses and I came to a conclusion. But very often in creative endeavors, for example, it's first that people have the intuition and the solution, and then they find out how they came to that. And this is for Jung intuition. It is not completely there, but it's already a direction where you could go and where you can investigate. So this is also what Jung says, that the fair amount of scientific discoveries come directly from there. When we write it down, it seems like, it's logic, just building stuff on a touch of each other. But people are circumvented and could just come out when they're geniuses to this. And you also have a German word for it, because he was Swiss, he spoke German. And German is called Ahnung, rather, which he said is a way clearer word than intuition, because intuition can have multiple meanings. But this means like an idea or concept or something or thought coming up. And this makes intuition also important and interesting when you don't know what to do, when the outside world does not show you what to do. You are in a situation, you know that then something is there, you can think about it, you can feel about it, but still you can be completely trapped and you don't know which way to continue. And this is where he says, when people are under extreme pressure and extreme difficult circumstances and are kind of lost and don't know how to continue, there are ideas coming into their mind. It's the psyche becoming active, like the old collective part of the unconscious with archetypes that have been into this situation before, but you as a human being just living in the here and now are not familiar with. And this is also through intuition. As I said, these are different pathways, how information or facts or ideas come to consciousness, to the ego, which is basically you. And this is then also when you have a hero story, and he uses a lot of stories as examples. You have this in the end of the second act, when the hero does not know what to do, like the problems look overwhelming, the dark night of the soul. It seems like also the bad guys won, there's nothing left to do. And then there comes this one idea pops up, how to solve these problems. And he says this happens through intuition, through this pathway to consciousness. So he calls it an orienting function because it accesses the collective parts of our unconscious. So, as I said, there are people who have already a favorite function when they come to the world, and it can be any function, and calls it the superior function. And this brings us then to intuitive types. So, in this book, Psychological Types, he does not only give definitions for intuition, but rather also what is it like to encounter someone who is highly intuitive, who is really depending on this function and uses it as a general function to do everything, right? Because when you have a favorite hand, the first thing you try to do and how you approach the world and try to solve problems is with your favorite hand. In this case, for the functions with the superior function. We have to be a little bit careful here because Jung was a psychologist and Jung had a practice and patience and so on. When he talks about intuitive types, he often means people who are almost pathological, let's say. You have four functions and you need all four of them to orientate yourself in the world and to solve problems and to live properly. You can't say, only need one and I can ignore the rest. Even though then most people are thinking that I have my favorite function, I have my favorite hand, right? I don't need the rest because I can do and explain everything with my favorite function. This, of course, does not work. Jung says everything is necessary. Jung is all about balance, things being balanced in a positive or some negative way. Which means when he talks about intuitive types, he means almost pathological behavior. So people who are almost only relying on their intuition. This is just as a disclaimer when I talk about now those. So, of course, we have to think about personality-wise, we don't only have the functions, we also have orientation. And there's a difference between an extroverted intuitive and an introverted intuitive. And he says, if you look and try to find extroverted intuitives, so people who try to see in the outside world possibilities and things that are not, let's say, potentially there, He says you find them in the professions, for example, of hunters, bankers, gamblers, but also politicians and leaders. The reason is because they see possibility, potential. He says when somebody is highly intuitive, they can also see the potential of a person, which makes them good leaders, or let's say give them some kind of unique insights. And hunters and gamblers, of course, by chasing possibilities, things that are not there yet, but could be in the future. Intuition is a kind of time function to think, okay, where does something came from and where is something potentially going? What else could it be in the future? So stock market, investment bankers. So where could the world develop to? Where could this company develop to? And in contrast to that, you have the introverted intuitives. And there he sees, for example, artists or prophets, people who even go deeper into the unconscious, because this is a pathway that goes into the unconscious. And when you're introverted, which also is characterized by an extreme attention to the internal world, you come basically to people who are just operating in the psyche, in the unconscious. And he says these are the kind of people that are the hardest to characterize because they are introverted, which means they don't have the need to express themselves in the outside world so much. And they're experiencing a lot of amazing things that other people are not experiencing because they're entrenched in the psyche and in the unconscious. And he even says, like, when these people are at least a little bit smart, they don't talk about these things they experience in their internal world because they would know that other people could not understand what they're talking about and they could use their access to the other people because they would be deemed crazy or just having delusions. To give an example for somebody who was highly intuitive, he uses Nietzsche. Jung did a huge seminar over 1,500 pages about Thus Spoke Zarathustra from Friedrich Nietzsche. And it's not even the whole book that they had to stop because World War II started. But that's for him, this is an example of somebody, okay, he experienced amazing things, but also in this case communicated them. But back then, nobody was interested in Nietzsche so much, especially in his later life when he talked about these kind of revelations. But he says, you see there are a lot of hallmarks of somebody who is highly intuitive, but also pathological intuitive. So he says an intuitive type sees dozens of possibilities, but at the same time does not go there to actually experience them. He has this example of when somebody is on top of a mountain and they have a telescope and they look on the mountain next to them through the telescope, they see the top very clearly, but it does not mean that they're really on the top because there's a whole valley between them. There's a whole distance between them. But he says for the intuitive, it's almost the same. It's the same being that as being there. And this, he says, is characteristic for intuitive people. They're completely focused on the possibilities, missing the actual realization of these possibilities. So it's kind of they're only touching reality from time to time. He even describes the behavior like that. They experience a thing, let's say that would be then through sensation, something in the outside world or something in the inside world, but they only touch it very slightly. Because immediately the intuition becomes active and they see all the possibilities, what it could be. And then they interact rather with the possibilities than the real thing that is there. So he describes even that they have a kind of veiled look, that they're not really there, that they're always caught somewhere else in the possibility sphere. And they're only shortly making contact with the real world and then also with the other people. And only thinking of possibilities does not mean that they're always right. So this is, Jung says that for every function. Every function has a meaning and has a virtue and it's necessary. But this is what I meant with, if you only focus on one function, you go astray because you're completely one-sided and you get all the good, but also all of the bad. And there's no counterbalance between that. So this idea of realizing this potential is not there. He describes it as people do something, intuitives, but before the fruits of the labors blossom, really, they immediately are off to the next thing because it's then boring. They said every concrete thing that materialized, if any of those possibilities becomes reality, it immediately becomes a prison because then it's only one thing. It's not a possibility anymore. It's only one thing. And then the person has to go off and do something else. So intuition is not always right. It's just seeing possibilities, but not necessarily the most likely possibilities. And that gives them feeling of kind of aloofness, not seriousness, in the sense of living only in potentiality means not manifesting one thing. He said, the intuitive always will try to keep the possibilities as much as open as possible. But at the same time, they get older and older. And he said, this is then very often reason for a breakdown because they hit 40, for example, and realize that they did not commit their whole life to something, but rather chase the possibilities always. So it's that he even describes it like that. They are always tempted to live beyond themselves because they know so many possibilities that they can almost live as though one could live in that, disregarding the actual possibility, the actual facts. So the typical diseases of intuitive people affect the abdomen because that corresponds to the earth. If you neglect the earth, you neglect the abdomen and you may get ulcers of the stomach, for instance. And this is what he characterizes on Nietzsche, because we know Nietzsche turned crazy. He got problems with his brain, almost due to syphilis also. But he says intuitives likely lose contact with their body. They're always aloof in the possibility sphere. And then they, at a certain point, come crushing down, because Jung always says there's a counterbalance coming up, always trying to bring people back into the middle, back into balance. And the force that is a counterweight has to be at least as big or even bigger than the one-sided force that's going astray. So what does it mean in a broader context, in context of Jungian ideas? Jung says about the modern mind, and when he talks about the modern mind, he talks about the modern Western mind, that it's all very rational. It's very focused on the intellect and thinking. So the whole education, how people live, how people approach the world, is again a training in only one function. This is thinking. And thinking, again, is a judgmental function. And he says, okay, this can create a kind of bad thing, as you cannot only do one thing. You also need the other thing. And this is the irrational function. So when you read Jung and he talks about irrationality being necessary, this is often, very often, that what he talks about. Experiencing the world and approaching the world in a sensation or intuition way. This sounds now abstract, but it's interesting to see the whole movement for mindfulness and meditation that is still going very strong is about that. Being in the moment and just experiencing without judging, without the judgmental functions of thinking and feeling. So Jung calls these things coming up from the unconscious fantasies. And the work of Jung is always related to his life and the steps he had, because when he had his, let's say, breakdown and had these visions of Europe in blood before the First World War, he was close to 40. And he said he approached his whole life rationally. And he had to re-explore and find these irrational functions of sensation and especially intuition, and to engage with his fantasies. And the engagement with his fantasies he wrote down in the black books, which then turned into the red book, which became the basis of everything happening afterwards. Psychological Types has been written and published in the 1920s, so almost 10 years after his breakdown. And the Jung we know and love and the ideas here that he had and is famous for, they happened all after this. So this is why he's then, of course, talking like, okay, very likely the journey he had is symptomatic for the West, and it's unnecessary also for other people to go this way and to experience things without judgment. Because every function can be developed and it can be trained, and for a whole personality and a complete human being, it would be necessary to go from an undifferentiated way, which is not so sophisticated, to a differentiated way. And for that, he does not give so many examples. That's again one thing where I struggled with Jung. He does not really give a lot of, let's say, techniques or advice how to do it, except a little bit for intuition, because he said this concept and ideas of active imagination are already that. To go into the conscious, experience fantasies, but also actively engaging with them. Already the noticing part in being open to something for Jung is such a huge step that the rest logically follows all by itself. But this acknowledging of fantasies and spending time with them and investigating them, this is consciousness. Consciousness is the development and more differentiating of functions and making them more sophisticated. And of course, we now talked about the intuitive times when it's their superior function, right? But it can also be the other way, which means there are people when they're sensation types, their inferior function is intuition. And intuition as an undifferentiated function can be very scary because suddenly fantasies are coming up. You're a completely down-to-earth person. You only believe the things that you're seeing that are immediately there. You do not deal with potentialities or other things, right? Those things are scary, spooky, or uninteresting, or whatever. But at the same time, your psyche will try to push this on you through the inferior function. And he has this example. He wrote a book about UFOs, the phenomena of UFOs. And very often it said, yeah, people saw UFOs that are down to earth and normal people and all this stuff. And he says, yeah, this is exactly why they saw them. It's they are so down to earth, they are so focused on the immediate that the psyche has to constellate something in them that is so powerful and overwhelms them. And this is why they had these vision and these experience. So it's not, oh, it's true because something down to earth saw it, but rather, oh, someone down to earth had to see it to come back into the center of the psyche. And of course, Jung goes with all his ideas a little bit further, and there's also going into, let's say, kind of weird territory, which I like to label. For example, he says the influence that people have on each other, this it means when two people meet, that they already have a feeling on intuition about someone else, has an influence on them. So when you have a highly intuitive person, that through the unconscious of the other person, that person is influenced. And he said, this is how psychological epidemics can spread from person. Of course, it has to spread through the unconscious, through the collective psyche of a group of people or a society or a culture. And this is something that I said already in the event for persona and groups, that you have groups that are then influenced by their grand psychology, which is clear, which is still followable. But he goes further by saying, okay, it's even that an intuitive person can kind of plant ideas in your psyche. And this is another big topic for Jung. When you have psychic contacts, they're not all personal, that they cannot only be explained by your personal experience and your personal journey or personality, but rather that things that are impersonal. And he already talks very often about the impersonal things that are from the collective unconscious. But this whole idea that there can be impersonal things from the person right next to you is something that he does not talk so much about, but he does in the context of intuition. So this planting of ideas uses it very often, for example, in marriages or in relationships, that when people, for example, do not accept their shadow side, which means the sides of their personality and their psyche they don't want to deal with, but for whatever reason whatsoever, they immediately project it onto other people. How he's describing it seems like the case of intuition, this projection goes actually through the psyche into the back of the bone, that people then get ideas about, for example, themselves that are not actually from themselves, but someone else. So it's a kind of psychological trick happening in the backside. And it can be an infection. And he says that it's critical to understand the things that are happening in the psyche, whether it's you and personal influences or impersonal influences. Again, this is Jung, and he does not exactly explain how to do this, let's say, as a technique or training-wise. But he says it's very important and something that needs to be looked out for, because that otherwise, like an infection, it can grow and grow and take over things. And he even says the sensation types do not like the intuition types because of something that intuitives can do by experiencing a possibility or potential. They kind of label it or mark it already, which means, let's stay with the example of the two mountains. On the one mountain is a intuitive, and he's looking on the peak of the other mountain through the telescope and seeing, ah, there's the other top. I'm already there. the sensation type, of course, has to go down the mountain and up the other mountain. It has to go through the valley to be there, to have the feeling of being there. But getting to the top, it's already like littered from the intuitive person. And that can be deeply frustrating for the sensation type, because it's asking, how does this come here? Why is it already marked? Because it's very hard to get here. This one I have not cracked completely, I have to say, because Jung does not talk about it so much. But it seems like really that intuitive people, by experiencing these possibilities, seem to kind of mark them, which then seems to be also be obvious to other people. So how to bring it all together? As a conclusion, we have to say that it would be easy to say intuition is important because everything is important for Jung. It always a degree of measure. But he says, because of this access to the unconscious, it plays a critical part in the creative creation of culture. And culture for Jung means a system of guiding psychic energy, psychic forces in a productive and useful manner. So for him, it is this access through intuition into the psyche, into the unconscious, that is critical for that. And that's why he also says, for the modern man, it's all very rational. It's all very outside. It's very extroverted. This introverted, non-judgmental view into the inside and being open for the things that are coming from there, because it's a collective unconscious. It's the collected wisdom of humanity and everything that came before, available through fantasies coming up. And pushing this away and ignoring that is not a good thing for the person, but also for a society, for a group or a culture. So this contact to the unconscious needs to be there. And this is where he saw really his life's work, to bring people back into contact with their psyche and make them more complete. But at the same time, that's not enough. It always needs other parts working in concert. And if all things work in concert with each other, this is when the good stuff comes up. And this is where it's really useful for everyone involved. So this would be my presentation part, and I want to thank you for your attention.
This was this event's topic. Thanks for tuning in. During an event, a discussion part follows after the presentation, where all attendees discuss the just presented topic or other Jungian concepts. If you also want to join, find the group on meetup.com. The name of the group is CG Jung Helpdesk. Also make sure to subscribe to the podcast on the platform of your choice. See you next time.